You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 568, recorded on Tuesday, September 25th, 2018, Faithfully Connected. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Sally and I are very happy to welcome to the show Professor Rachel Feld from Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota. Rachel is going to lead us through her exploration of a book she's using in class called Faithfully Connected, as she teaches our future educators, talking about digital literacy, etiquette, law, rights and responsibilities, digital security. It's going to be a subject each month as we have our educational technology focused show. So happy to have Rachel joining us. We have all kinds of other stuff for you. Stay tuned. Here we are back at episode 568, and Sally is with us as usual. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am great, Martin. Happy to be here.
And we have a special guest. We know we are back in the school year when we begin to have our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents join the show once a month, and that's Rachel Feld. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally. Glad to be here as well.
How are things in New Ulm?
They're a little cloudy, but it's cooled off a little bit, so that's nice.
All right. And Rachel, remind everybody your position there, what you do.
I'm the Director of Academic Computing and Online Learning here at MLC. So I teach a class to the education majors about how to use technology in the classroom. And then I do a lot with our learning management system, Moodle.
Okay. And your first year there?
I finished up my first year, so this is my...
Oh, your second
starting
year.
Off my second.
Wow. Yep. Right. It's time flown. Gosh. So the honeymoon is over.
Yep.
And it's to work you go each day. So good. And you're still liking it.
Oh, it's just wonderful. It's so great to be able to teach all of our future teachers. It's just a joy and a privilege.
Nice. And you're a Midwest girl by birth, right? So you're not too adverse to the winters you're going to experience up there.
Yeah, not too bad. You know, I grew up in Colorado, where I will say the weather is a little nicer, but I've been in the Midwest long enough to be able to deal with it.
Good. Well, we are so happy that you signed up for another year with us. You can put up with us for another year. We appreciate your insights, and it's really nice to have, I think, that perspective of that you have of teaching our future teachers, and maybe bringing some of that into the show as well. That's interesting stuff. So,
really appreciate it this season, Martin, because not only is she here to talk with us, she gave us a great topic to discuss this season, and something that she's using in her classroom. And it's a book that Rachel found called Faithfully Connected. And Rachel, maybe you can tell us a little bit of backstory of why you recommended this book.
Sure. Well, you know, I was, over the summer, reviewing the course and everything that I teach and just, you know, really reflecting on how technology is more than just knowing how to use the tools. You know, I can teach our students how to use Word or Docs or any number of things, but those will change. I was really looking for, you know, kind of a foundational piece. How do we look at technology in our lives? And I happened to come across this book from Concordia Publishing House, written specifically for teachers. It's called Faithfully Connected, Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World. And it takes a very practical look at how teachers, educators, but it really can go to pastors and parents and just people in general, how we can look at those, you know, ideas of digital citizenship, how we use technology, how we can use it to share our faith, and just really get at the heart of how, as a Christian, we should be using technology.
So is this something that you'd recommend everybody have on their shelves, at least those people that are in the classroom, or who's the audience, and what do you think of the book so far?
I really like it. We use it for a textbook, kind of the first unit of the class this year, and I would suggest it to parents and educators. It might make a really nice book study for a faculty, just to kind of, you know, be all on the same page of, you know, different, how do we communicate with technology? What is our etiquette when we are posting things online? Security, how is it affecting our health? Just so many things beyond the, here's how we use these tools.
Nice. So we're going to be using this book as kind of our discussion topic when we have you on the show every other month. So if people are inclined to follow along with us and kind of read the book with us, you can certainly do that. I'm assuming this is available in Amazon and other places.
It sure is. Amazon, the Concordia Publishing House website. I believe on Amazon it's even got the Kindle edition. So
that's what I've got. Yep.
Okay. And we're going to discuss it actually every month, Martin. Maybe I didn't clue you in.
That's
on that.
That's right. I'm
Jason's
sorry.
On board gonna, to discuss gonna, it with us when he's on the
Jason's
show, too.
We tied Jason's hands behind his back and said, Jason, enough talk about robots. We're going to talk about this.
So. We might talk about robots some
We
as
may
well.
Talk about robots, yes. But we're also going to talk about this. Yeah, I've forgotten that. So, yeah, we're going to get through that. And how many, did we figure out how many chapters we're going to take a month?
I think we're going to do one a month.
Are we going to do with
do
one?
Do a little introduction this week. This month and take chapter one, and there's nine chapters, so it works out well for our season.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. All right. So it'll be good to get Rachel's take and Jason's take as well. So
and the chapters are interesting. They are written for use in the classroom as well. They come with not just a classroom lesson plan, but also a catechism kind of discussion starter type plan as well. So all the chapters, all the topics we'll cover, there's actually practical material that you can make use of right away in your classroom.
So would this be something, Rachel, in your opinion, that a pastor could use in a catechism class?
I think so. I think it would be great for pastors to read because it kind of, you know, gives you an outline of some of the things that our students are facing in the digital world that you might just not think of otherwise. And then, like Sally said, at the end of each chapter, it's got just some ideas for how the topic can be integrated in various parts of your catechism class.
So good stuff. I think that it was maybe Martin who pointed out one particular point in the introduction that I really liked, and I'm trying to get to the right page. It says, schools and teachers are charged with building knowledge and encouraging the love of learning in school. Schools and teachers also have the complicated task of deciding the base of knowledge that students should know by heart, and when it's more appropriate to know simply how to access information as needed.
I don't know how profound that is, but I found that really interesting because I think that is maybe not necessarily something teachers had to deal with 20 years ago, because information, you know, was usually bound up in an encyclopedia or a dictionary or a textbook that didn't go along with people, you know, along with life. And now people have that in their pockets, and that's a really different world.
And I think that makes for a big shift in how we think about education. You know, you think to history class and math class where it's a lot of facts, and you've maybe seen the meme where someone, they have a picture of a cell phone and say, my teacher said that I wouldn't have a calculator with me all the time. And, you know, now we do. You have a calculator with you everywhere.
Right.
So the focus kind of needs to shift from what facts do you know to how can you use those facts? Because the facts are so readily available, it's the application that becomes a little more important.
Right.
Great lead in into chapter one. The first topic they choose to cover in the book is called digital access. And the facts are very readily available for many of us, but this chapter really focuses on maybe it's not the case across the board for everyone, and something that you as educators and even potentially as part of your outreach methodology need to take into account, that not everyone has equal access to those facts.
Yeah, and this can be, you know, kind of a big eye-opener when you think about everything that we use technology for. You know, if you're looking for a job, you're probably going to look online. If you are looking for a place to live, an apartment to rent, a house to buy, you're probably going to look online. How much of our students' work now is done online? And if you have limited access or no access, what kind of a disadvantage does that put people at?
I'm curious, when you talk to your students about this topic, they have some of their own experiences. Do we find that maybe some of our teachers are coming from positions of disadvantage? They live in a rural area and they couldn't experience some of the things that you're even talking about.
I think that can very much be the case where, you know, we've got schools in places where you don't have that high-speed internet access, or maybe mm-hmm. you do in town but not outside of town. And so what, you know, have you planned for that in your lesson? Are you allowing them to have access? Or even, you know, maybe they have a device at school but they don't have a device at home. So how are we as educators making sure everyone has kind of that equal opportunity?
Right. I was talking with my wife the other day about this topic. I mentioned we were going through this book, and this was kind of the topic for the day. And her comment was interesting. She teaches upper grades, 5th through 8th grade, in a fairly urban setting. Hartford, Wisconsin is not, you know, in the boonies, and so access is pretty prevalent, but there are still kids without it. And her observation was that she sees a changing kind of landscape or trend where there's not as much work being done at home, but more and more work is being done at school. So, you know, less homework, but maybe more homework type activities that are going on within the classroom or within the educational setting on the campus. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, kind of, you know, some teachers are going to that flipped classroom model mm-hmm. where they want to be the kind of guide the students in their work while they're at school. I think that plays in a little bit as well to the, you know, what are we having our students do with the facts? A lot of times, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the fact delivery was done at school, and then that application was done at home.
Mm-hmm.
And with the fact delivery being so much quicker sometimes, you can do more of that application in school. And I think that can have a lot of benefits.
Yep. In our pre-show discussion, we talked a little bit about the church as well, and some of the questions in the catechism discussion guide kind of lean toward this as well, how you can do outreach and potentially do that outreach by providing some digital access. You know, there's probably something to be said for driving people to your resources and letting them use the tools you've created in your environment if those are digital things. So providing some Wi-Fi access or whatever, even for the community at large, if you want them to see your resources. So they log into your Wi-Fi network and they land on your church homepage or whatever as their starting point. So kind of addressing a larger scope, but working it into an outreach plan. Sounds like an interesting model. What do you guys think?
I think, you know, you got to be careful of security always, but when Wi-Fi access is such a big deal, if you don't have it, you know, if a church can offer that and maybe have a fellowship hall be open, or maybe a church narthex, and you know, have the pastor there for, you know, we've got Wi-Fi here, and the pastor will be there to talk to you, and maybe someone to, you know, help navigate job boards or things like that. I think that can be a great tool if that fits in a community.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of opportunities in that sphere. I think in the past we've also talked about using the access that you have and maybe some of the tools that you have. Maybe it's a computer lab or space for evening classes, ESL, or digital literacy. All those things, I think, are possibilities because you have the facilities. You have the technology. You have an opportunity to bring people onto your campus, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the catechism lesson, again, at the end of this digital access chapter, it talks about bringing them God's Word. Obviously, that's in digital format these days. And so, you know, giving them access to God's Word in the process. I know ESL classes oftentimes will use portions of Scripture or whatever for studying the English language or whatever. And you're giving them the gospel message along with those lessons. So I think it could be a win-win.
Right. Lots of opportunity, and I'm really excited about getting through the rest of the book here. This is a great start talking about the digital divide and digital access, because we're going to get into some things that I think every teacher or anybody who's dealing with you know, the education of this digital new age has to deal with, things like etiquette and rights and responsibilities and security and lots of different things that are very intriguing, and, you know, a lot of open questions and a quickly changing landscape. So this is really a timely topic.
And yeah, probably worth mentioning, the book was just published this year, so it's very recent research. They're obviously, they've done their homework on this. It's not just you know, put together quickly. There's a lot of great content here and research that's included.
Yep, great pick, Rachel. Thank you. All right, so let's move on with the rest of our show. And we have, those of you that are our frequent listeners know, we kind of have a schedule. We have a liturgy. News and tech is usually what comes up next. And a little bit of news for you folks that have iPhones and iPads. iOS, which is the operating system, is up to version 12. That was launched last week. Number of new features. We'll put a link to an article in the show notes from CNET. Along with kind of being faster, there wasn't a lot of visual changes, but I think they added some features that may make a difference in how you actually use your phone. One of them at the top of the list is what they call Siri Shortcuts. About 2 years back, they purchased a company called Workflow, which is kind of a macro or script writing tool for your phone. And now they've rebranded it Siri Shortcuts, which allows you to use Siri a little bit more effectively and build pretty complicated sets of automation that make your phone a little bit smarter and a little bit easier to use as well. They have better notifications, so you can group your notifications, which is, I think, a welcome addition to iOS 12, where you don't have just this long list of notifications. It makes it a lot more usable, in my opinion. They brought back the ability of closing apps. A lot of people do that, although you don't necessarily have to, or at least that's what the conventional wisdom is. You used to have to kind of do this funny thing of swiping up and then hitting a close button. Now you can just swipe up like you used to. And maybe the biggest feature of all is a built-in tape measure. For all of you that have been longing for the ability to measure stuff on your desk, they claim that the app, through the use of the camera, allows you to, you know, exactly how wide and long your keyboard is. So those are some of the things in iOS 12. So we'll put a link, as I mentioned, in the show notes. I forgot one other feature, which actually ties into our conversation about digital literacy. I think they call it screen time. So it gives you kind of an accurate reading of how much you've been using your phone, what apps you're spending your time in, and actually gives you the ability to discipline yourself by not letting you use apps after a certain period of time. So you can set this up for yourself and say, hey, I'm only spending 1 hour a day on Pinterest, and then it will cut you off. You can override it, of course, but what's that?
Sad, sad day.
Sad, sad day when you can only spend 1 hour on Pinterest. I think they're trying to be sensitive to what these phones are doing to us or could do to us, and giving us some tools to better control that. So, if you haven't checked it out, iOS 12 is out there for most iOS devices. If you got a real old phone, perhaps, or iPad, it may not be capable of updating to iOS 12, but most of them can. So, and I've heard good things about stability and actually improved battery life, so it's worth a try.
Excellent.
I think we can move on to Wells Now. Sally, what's in that category today?
Well, it's something happening right now in the fact that we are excited to announce our very first reveal of a presenter at Wells EdTech Lead 2019. And
Drum roll.
Yeah, that deserves a lot of attention. We're going to be spending a lot of time picking the brains of these presenters and getting excited about what they're presenting. And we can start today because Professor Rachel Feld will be live and in person at Wells EdTech Lead 19, presenting not one but two different sectionals. Rachel, what can you tell us about what you're presenting next summer?
Well, I'm very excited that I get to share these two topics. The first one that I'm going to share is about using technology in Bible lessons. If I had to pick something that I miss the most about teaching first and second grade, it would be teaching Bible lessons. And telling those little kids about Jesus was just such a highlight of my day. And along the way, I collected a lot of websites and technology-type things that I felt made my Bible lessons better and maybe more effective, and really, you know, use those different visuals and interactive things that can help improve engagement. So hopefully that will be a great topic. And the other one is using Google Apps in Wellza. And if your school is Wellza certified, you've maybe seen the Google spreadsheet that gets used during the certification process. And I've got some other tools that I built that was part of my master's project back at Wisconsin Lutheran College. So some other tools to help your school through that Wellza process, make it a little more collaborative and easier to share all your evidence.
Excellent.
Very nice.
See those people gearing up to sign up now, but they have to wait all the way till December. Late December, you should be able to start registering for Wells EdTech Lead 19. So stay tuned for that announcement when our registration is open. Meanwhile, just get excited. Head over to wellsedtechlead.com and join our mailing list if you haven't already, and then stay tuned there for more of these type of announcements of exciting presenters that are going to be part of the summit.
At least save the date, June 25th to 27th in Wisconsin Dells. Awesome. Tips, picks. We have, I think, a little bit of both this week. Rachel, want to lead off today?
Yes. So my tip pick of the week is a blog that I follow pretty regularly. It's called Control-Alt-Achieve. So a little bit like Control-Alt-Delete that would, you know, restart your computer, but this one's Control-Alt-Achieve. It's by a gentleman named Eric Curtis. He is an educator, and he has a lot of great posts about different ways to use technology in the classroom, and especially with different Google apps. He's got, like if you want to use Google Slides in your classroom, he's got a lot of different activities. Some of my favorites, like he's got how to build jack-o'-lanterns in Google Slides that you can then use like as a story starter. Just a lot of really great ideas for unique ways to use technology in the classroom.
Yeah, I'm checking out his website now, and he has tabs along the top: home, resources, webinars, services, and newsletter. His resources tab looks like kind of a one-stop shop if you're interested, especially in a particular Google app. He's got everything represented there, from slides to forms to sites to groups to Gmail, Google+. It's all there, and you can go there to a particular link and then find all kinds of helpful information about those things, including past blog posts and add-ons and all kinds of help that can get you started. So good stuff.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his webinar section, all kinds of recorded videos there and all kinds of mostly Google apps, but he has some Microsoft stuff in there, and just looks like some good how-to stuff. So excellent.
It's amazing. The body of work people can deliver once they start kind of aggregating things this way. Yeah. It looks like he's been at it heavy since 2016, so three solid years almost of posts, and it turns into a real
great resource.
Yeah.
Willing to share, too.
Thanks
so
for
that's nice.
That.
Awesome. All right, Sally, you're up. What's your pick of the week?
All right. My pick of the week has the word simple in it, and I want you to hold on to that because it doesn't seem like it's the most simple thing, even after reading the simple guide. The title of it is How to Set Up HTTPS on Your Site, a Simple Guide. And it's from our friends over at Make Use Of, which is a great site with all kinds of how-tos around technology. And I think it's a great read, even if some of it may be over your head like it was over mine. But HTTP versus HTTPS has kind of gotten into the spotlight lately because Google made a decision recently to display in their browser a warning message if the site is not HTTPS or secured with an SSL certificate. It says not secure when you go to that website, which is, I mean, that's what all our websites used to be, HTTP, but that's just not good enough these days. You really want to be aware that they're encrypting data as you're interacting with their site, and that's what the HTTPS gives you. And if you guys know better than me, you can jump right into this simple explanation of the simple guide, but I think that's what it does. And I will tell you, we've done this on some of our personal sites, and your site host may offer this as a free addition to your site. It's just a matter of basically turning it on, going through the process of getting the important keys and things that you need to make this work on your site. That's the case for the site host that we use for our personal sites. It's called SiteGround. It's actually one that's mentioned in the article. So if you're hosting with us, a provider like SiteGround or similar ones, you might want to just check out whether they have this as their offering. The thing about SSL certificates, there's kind of different kinds, and they can cost you money. But these hosting providers can provide this kind of lower level that gives you the site encryption, but not really all the way for things like credit card transactions or whatever. They can provide this for little or no cost, potentially, depending on who you're hosting with. So definitely check out the article. Don't ignore this if your site isn't HTTPS. It's something you should really get on your list of things to dig into and get it taken care of, because it's going to become more and more apparent as people are using browsers and things, and they're not going to trust your site unless it has this level of security associated with it. How's that for a simple explanation?
I don't know how they can call this. Actually, they do make it pretty simple, but it is very complete. They go from top to bottom.
They do.
Even talking about some of the problems you can run into without having this, or once you do it, with maybe links to content that aren't on HTTPS-protected sites. One other thing to note is that Google deprioritizes or puts them lower in their search engine results if they are not HTTPS sites. So you are probably less findable if you don't have a secure site as well. So I think they even said they wouldn't even include them in the results at some point in the future. So if that isn't reason enough to get at this simple guide, this really is well put together. They have screenshots and everything. Yeah. So it's good. It's good.
Some advertising mixed in there, so don't be confused by that. But definitely a lot of screenshots. And probably worth mentioning for those people that use Final Web for your church or school website, Final Web does include HTTPS with your regular account. You don't have to pay extra or anything. But if you have links that are going to HTTP, you could update those, you know, and make them go to HTTPS. If you have any questions, definitely contact Final Web support on that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good find. All right, my pick of the week. Again, I return to iOS. Apple has been in the news quite a bit lately, and one challenge that I had been facing over the last few months is that I had heard, and this is true, that the Inbox app from Google is being decommissioned, and they're just sending everybody back to their mobile Gmail app. And so I decided, well, I'll jump out while I can get used to Gmail. And I just really didn't ever catch on to it. It didn't have a lot of the same functionality. I didn't think it was easy to use. It was kind of a step back. So for the past few weeks, I'd been looking for an alternative. And I finally decided that, well, I'm just going to keep this as simple as possible and use the tools built into the phone, which is the Mail app on the iPhone or on the iPad. It comes with it. It's actually very easy to hook up to Gmail and Exchange and Office 365 and Yahoo and Hotmail and all the other providers. One thing I really like about the app is it's very fast. Another thing, it has a unified inbox, so I can see all my emails from all the different accounts that I have in one place. It's easy to triage and get through email. I decided a long time ago I didn't want to spend a lot of time answering emails, let's say on my phone or even on the iPad, that usually if something is worth answering, I'm going to spend a little bit more time and do it on the computer. But I do want to kind of get through my email and be updated on what's going on. If there's something urgent I need to deal with, I want to get at that quickly and be able to get rid of all the cruft that comes into my inbox as well. And the Mail app is actually very good at that. But the link that I'm going to put in the show notes is actually not about the Mail app, but about a feature in the Mail app, and that's how to save email messages, not just in folders, because you can do that in any Mail app, but save an email as a PDF wherever you want. So one of the features that I really wanted for doing triage was to be able to save emails in OneNote. And that didn't seem obviously apparent to me when I was looking at the Mail app. It was definitely more difficult in Gmail, if even possible at all. But I'm going to include a link to a nice guide from about a year ago that allows you to save an email, push it out as a PDF, kind of print it as a PDF, but then store it wherever you want. It couldn't be in Google Drive. It could be in Dropbox. It could be in OneNote, Evernote, all those. Anything that you can use the share sheet with, the send to functionality on iOS, you can save a PDF to. So this is a nice find because it really kind of takes care of the primary things that I was most interested in a Mail app in doing. Doesn't cost a dime, comes preloaded, and works very reliably. They've made some nice updates. I think in iOS 10, they made kind of a revamped Mail app, and they upped their game quite a bit. So it's much better than it used to be. So if you haven't tried it in a while, or if you're using something else, certainly let us know, but I think I would highly recommend trying the Mail app once again, because I think it just does what it needs to do and kind of gets out of the way. So that is my pick of the week.
Good choice, Martin. Welcome back. That's where I've been the whole time. So
is that right?
Nice to have you join me.
Some people are just smarter than others. I have to be to go through trials and tribulations to get back to where I should be. But we'll see how this goes. But I did do quite a bit of research, and there are a bunch of apps out there. But this seems to just do the job. So, Rachel, you're an iPhone user, right?
I sure am.
What's your Mail app?
Well, I've I keep my work email separate from all my other email. So all of my other addresses go into the mail app, but my work email has been an inbox for 2 years now, so I'm going to have to
make
figure
a choice
something
there.
Else out, too.
Yep. I really love that app. I thought that was awesome. One of the nicest features, and maybe you figured out how to do this, but in inbox, it groups them by category, so promotions or social or whatever. And very often, everything that's in that category, I just want to delete all at once. And inbox made that real easy. So there's 10 emails in there. Just hit the delete button. All 10 are gone. In the Gmail app, I could not figure out that if that functionality was there. I had to do one at a time, which, you know, was a total waste of my time and a turnoff. So that was one of the reasons I switched back. All right. I think we're to what we used to call ministry resources, but I was convinced that maybe this was my idea even. I don't remember Sally anymore. But it's no longer a ministry resource. It's a Pinterest resource, at least for this this show. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sally.
I think we're going to try that for our education-based shows. So each month when Jason and Rachel are joining us, we're going to focus on a particular topic on Pinterest because we found that Pinterest is very popular with teachers. It's a really great place to go and find things, you know, for the classroom, for the Sunday school classroom, all different subjects and all kinds of cool
app.
Stuff.
You may need to expand that 1 hour limit you have on the iPhone to plumb
maybe
the depths.
So
what do we have in this category?
Well, I thought this week we could start with just looking at STEM activities at the elementary level. So just kind of a basic search. If you go to Pinterest and type in STEM activities elementary, you're going to come up with just probably more than you'll ever need for STEM activities for an elementary level. The list just goes on, and there's some amazingly fun, cool stuff here. Building model robotic hands, reading in STEM, so recommendations on books related to STEM. All different STEM challenges, like making an action figure that can float, or an airplane challenge with a certain number of pennies involved, or whatever it may be. I've seen spaghetti challenges, candy corn, catapults, all kinds of things here on just a basic search on Pinterest. And what is so cool about Pinterest is it's all visual. So you're seeing pictures of what the activity might look like, and they look like a lot of fun. So I think it would be a good thing to do to use this for different research that you're doing. Certainly you can use links, you can drill down, and when you get your search results, there's actually little buttons kind of along the top. So my search results show first, fourth, third, simple, kindergarten, you know, team building, easy, challenging. So you can, you know, drill down in your search to things that are more specific of what you're looking for. And many times that'll solve your challenge if you're looking for something for STEM. But then you can also look for people that aggregate information on STEM activity type boards. And we have a few of those to throw in the mix and links in the show notes as well. Rachel, you have a STEM board that you're sharing this week, right?
I sure do. You know, I had to, my first year of teaching, Pinterest was not in existence yet. It was a rough year of teaching.
Things got better after that, huh?
They did. but yeah, I've got a STEM board with a lot of the things that you talked about, and I think something that really catches my eye is there have been a lot more children's literature books written about STEM and about, you know, how to solve a problem and just making that literature connection to STEM lessons, I think is really cool.
Good deal. So yeah, definitely head over to wellstech.wells.net. Look for our show notes for episode 568, and you'll find links for Pinterest STEM activities for elementary. And check them out. Let us know if you have favorite STEM boards that you follow. We'd be happy to share those as well.
This should not be a surprise to anybody who listens to this show, but I did not know that those little suggestions came up at the top after the survey. I just kind of ignored those. I looked at the pretty pictures, but those are super helpful. Those are kind of like filters. Mm-hmm. You know, they add to the search and they really help you narrow down things. And you may just start very general and then you can actually get to something that you're really after. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I clicked
on one.
This Pinterest
thing may catch on.
How about that? It's got Martin's quasi seal of approval. Yeah,
yeah,
just clicking
right.
One on for first grade. Then it has a sub-level of math, if you want to look specifically for math at the first grade
right.
level. So,
yeah,
you definitely can drill down.
That's
good
cool.
stuff.
All right. All right, community feedback is next.
And we are happy to share, and it's a little bit of a belated share, so happy and apologizing at the same time, something that Michael Vliger sent to us. It's he is a teacher at Risen Savior in Mankato, Minnesota, and he emailed us a couple of weeks ago, and we failed to include it in last week's show, so finally getting to it. But the timing is just right, because this is a free offer that started last Friday, September 21st, 2018. So if you're interested, you can jump right in and request this. And it is a piece of software that has been opened up to be free for students, kindergarten through high school age. And then they have discounted levels for college students as well. And it's called Thayer Birding Software. And apparently, and it's like a local, you know, install it on your computer kind of software. It's not a web app. It's not something you're going to find in the app store necessarily. They have versions for Windows and for Mac. And you can also download a version that runs off a USB flash drive for Windows or Mac. So a little bit kind of old school in that regard, that it's more of a local software that you download. But it is apparently very, very robust and very good if you're interested in studying birds. They include over 6,000 photos of birds, 1,500 song files, so you can hear what the bird songs sound like. They have over 500 videos, and they have quizzes built in as well. And that covers 1,007 species of birds, so very thorough bird watching software, and apparently just really well done. Michael learned about it from a friend of his who's a biology professor at Bethany Lutheran College, Professor Chad Hines, who highly recommends the software. It normally costs $49.95. And like I said, if you as a representative of your school write for a special code, they'll give you a code that you can share freely with your students to download the software and at no cost. Apparently, the man behind the software's name is Peter Theater, and he's turning 70. Perhaps his birthday was last Friday, the 21st, and that's why the offer is out there in honor of his birthday. They want to just give away the software. They say they're going to do this indefinitely, so not something that you have to worry about expiring or anything like that. And again, highly recommended by Professor Hines and by Michael Vliger, and we're just excited to share this with our Wells Tech listeners.
Very nice. Community feedback is a section we always look forward to and really would appreciate it if you'd participate, if that is something that you'd like to do. You can do that by going to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and comment on one of the shows there. It's easy to do. Or participate by sending us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or any of the social networks that we're on, and those are also listed on that show notes page, Pinterest being one of them. So take advantage of that. Let us know what you're thinking, some maybe resources that you've come across that might be helpful to share, questions you might have. So all of that's fair game. We'd love to have you on the show. Let's close the show with our video of the week, Sally.
And I'd really defer to Rachel because she brought this to our attention. It's something from PBS. They did it several years ago, and it's titled Digital Nation. Rachel, it ties into our conversation we had earlier about digital access, I believe.
It really does. It's a documentary that PBS did along with Verizon, the cell phone company, and it talks about the digital divide and what that the haves versus the have-nots as far as classroom technology. And was, even though it's, I think it was 2010, I want to say. So a little older, but still very relevant. Showed a school, I believe, down south somewhere that had a whole room full of Chromebooks, but they could not do anything with them because they could not get Wi-Fi. And just the challenges that some of our schools are facing because they don't have the technology that we often take for granted. And there's also a very interesting section on teacher training and how even if you've got great technology, but if you don't train your teachers in how to use it, what good is that technology doing? And just, it was some really great food for thought.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing that. Nice find. That's going to about do it for this week's show. Next week, we will be back at it for show 569. And I'm going to share with the class some slides and some maybe some research that I've come up with talking about security. There's lots of new rules and regulations out there, some coming from our country, some from other countries that do affect us. One of those is GDPR. We'll talk about what that is and how it might affect how your network is structured, how you create forms, what you can and can't ask people, and what you can do with their data. I think it affects almost everybody, school or church alike. So tune in next week for a conversation about GDPR and security. That'll be next week. Rachel, very glad to have you again. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
You're welcome. It's always great to be here.
And Sally from St. Louis, thank you for being here as well. We look forward to chatting again next week. Thanks to everybody for joining us, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.